identical to the one that was lying on the cropped turf at JB's side. The Sticky's hair was long and luxuriantly blonde, so thick and curling that Ryan immediately suspected that the mutie was wearing a wig. His eyes didn't protrude as much as normal Sticky's, and they were almost almond-shaped. He was smiling, showing that he had no teeth at all between the fleshy lips.
Name's Charlie.
This is Christy, Jack, and I'm...
The smile vanished like the last smear of sunlight off a mountaintop.
It's you. The man with the patch who rode shotgun with the traitor. Ryan Carter. I never forget a name or a face. You and me have got some talking to do.
The amount of time passed was about right. Charlie looked to be in his early 20s, and Ryan's memory put the happening about 10 or 11 years ago. It had been up near the Darks, near some ragged-assville, centered on an old church with a dome of weathered green copper. The name of the place had vanished, but the incident and the sticky brat with curly yellow hair came flooding back from Ryan's past. Abe had been involved, tall, skinny Abe, with a lugubrious sense of humor and the drooping mustache, hair that he generally used to wear tied back in a ponytail. He'd done mostly jobs around Warwag 1, started off as a helper to Lowe's and the rest of the cooks, then graduated to rear gunner. And it had been the time of...
Gert Wolfram, and the one that called himself the Magus, the warlock or the sorcerer. Name's not even worth the trouble of forgetting.
Names of men that Ryan himself would never be able to forget. The Magus. That was most common of his three names. Sometime in the past, he'd suffered an appalling injury. Half of his face was missing, the spaces filled with aluminum and flesh-colored plastic. His eyes were hidden behind steel shells. His reputation was linked with Sticky's. He'd go out into the bleak wildernesses where the muties congregated and bring them back alive, then sell them to the traveling freak master, Gert Wolfram, 350 pounds of cherubic evil. He was ringmaster in his own macabre circus that toured the filthy frontiervilles, where the writ of decency never ran. The Stickies were an integral part of Wolfram's tented horror show. They'd be prodded into fighting against each other, or against bears or cougars or mangy wolves. Wolfram would also arrange cheap displays of erratic pyrotechnics whose explosions and multicolored flaring fires would drive the drugged Stickies into a frenzy. People loved it. Ryan was trying to remember what had happened to the Magus and to Gert Wolfram when Charlie, the Sticky's leader, interrupted his train of thought.
You recall me, don't you, Carter?
Yeah. I recollect the time our paths crossed.
Our paths crossed. Well, a blood-eyed norm like you would think about it, Carter. Bet you a hat full of Jack you don't recollect the butchered innocents.
I remember we came across one of the hunting parties of the Magus. Chilled them. They had a group of,
Stickies is the word you're struggling to avoid, Carter.
Yeah, a pack of Stickies. Trader was ready to set them free.
A pack, Carter? It was a family. You think Stickies don't have fucking families? Forgive my language, Firehead, but that was a family. It was my whole family. My father, my mother, three older brothers, two aunts and five uncles, and me... I was 9 summers old, Carter.
The valley had been dark, steep-sided. The Warwags had camped a half mile away, near a still lake where fish had jumped. The heavily armed guards of the Magus lay where they'd been shot, the blood still trickling into the leaf mold. And the Stickies huddled together, as Abe had struck off their chains.
We'd have let you go.
But you didn't.
No.
No, they didn't let us go. They chilled everyone, except for the little yellow-haired boy. They left him there, surrounded by corpses, his leg and arm broken.
Ryan bit his lip. He could remember the scene, remember why the massacre had happened. But he figured there wasn't much point in trying to explain to this unusual Sticky how it had been. Charlie obviously had his own embittered memory, and nothing would change that.
Why did you and Trader do that, Carter?
One of your women had a knife. Several of you backed her when she cut Abe. Started a chilling fight. We lost 2 good men there.
And all I lost was 12 of my family. All my family, Carter.
You didn't give us any choice, Charlie. No goddamn choice at all.
We'll talk more when we get back to our camp. You say there's nothing over the ridge?
Nothing.
Then we'll go. But first we'll check out that you don't have any hideaways. If you have, then you're all dead meat, here and now.
Ryan was finding it hard to come to terms with what was going on. Stickies were triple stoops, everyone knew that. Vengeful and murderous, with about as much sense of organization as a confederation of decapitated roosters. Now this one, Charlie, seemed to be a whole lot brighter than the average citizen of Deathlands, and he ran a tight patrol with a facade of organization. It didn't make any sort of sense. Ryan started, slowly and reluctantly, to peel off his clothes.
See, one of them did you harm, Carter.
Tore some skin. Way stickies do, Charlie. You know that.
Enough. You talk big now, Carter. But that big talk won't last too long.
They'd moved some little distance from the slope that hid the Box Canyon, but Ryan still had a cold dread that Mildred or JB would come strolling into view and get blasted.
Quicker with the stripping. All three of you, quicker!
Ryan's eye caught Jack's glance. The albino was stooped, fiddling with the laces of his combat boots. He'd somehow managed to sidle himself over to the edge of the group, only four or five quick steps away from the dark fringe of the surrounding forest. The boy made sure Ryan was watching him, then moved his right thumb a half inch toward the trees and repeated the movement. Ryan nodded his head very slightly. That was all it took. Ryan looked up at Christy, seeing that she'd also caught the infinitely subtle exchange. She immediately pulled off her shirt, revealing a white cotton bra with half cups that barely seemed to contain her breasts. Her nipples were pressing at the taut material like summer cherries. Ryan knew that there wasn't a hope in Hades of all three of them making it. Charlie held the Uzi steady on his own belt buckle. Only one had a chance, and that had to be the local boy, Jack.
All the way, Norm, bitch!
Christy reached behind her, making the bra even tighter, then loosened the catch, dropping the wisp of cotton to her feet. She stooped to pull off the dark blue western boots with the silver falcons and slipped in the dirt. She fell flat on her back, her firm breasts filling everyone's eyes. Ryan was ready for it, but even he didn't spot the moment that Jack Lauren made his move. One second the slim figure was standing there among them, then he wasn't. There hadn't seemed to be any intervening stage of movement. Charlie saw it first. He spun and held down the trigger of the machine pistol, a stream of high-velocity lead missing Christie's tumbled figure by inches.
Get him!
In his patchwork jacket, the slim teenager was mercury in motion, darting between the close-packed trees, disappearing. Ryan stood very still, knowing that the anger of the Sticky's leader might easily mean instant, summary execution for Christie and himself. Four of the patrol lumbered into the shadowed darkness, one firing his musket.
They won't find him, will they?
I doubt it.
Well, now he'll go and hunt up some friends and come back here to try to rescue you. We'll be long gone. Shame he did that. Won't make it any easier for you two.
That's the way it goes.
Christy sat in the dirt, not making any effort to cover herself.
To tell you the truth, it makes it harder for me. These others, they depend on me beating Norms, proving I'm better. The Snowhead fucked that up for me.
I'm real sorry.
Strip off now. Let's have that over. Then we get moving.
A moment later, Ryan didn't make any resistance to the search for hidden weapons, closing off his surging anger. Christy also shut down a part of her mind, so that the probing clawed fingers and the suckered hands were only a dull sensation. The sniggering and the intrusion into the secret places of her body passed, as all things did. Fire any blaster within a mile of a sleeping John Barrymore Dix, and he'll not only wake up, but he'll be jerked from the land of warm sand with a certain identification of the make and type of the weapon, with a close guess at its caliber. Which was why he had come to instantly alert consciousness, but in a state of some considerable confusion.
9mm Uzi.
His hand had already picked up his own blaster and was holding it ready. A 9mm Uzi.
Whose?
On his feet, crouched, his memory analyzed the sounds he'd heard. A burst of rapid fire, ripping through the stillness, but a little muffled, at least a quarter mile away. Behind him, Mildred was by the ancient ruins where they were camped. She'd heard the noise of the shooting and had spun around. Across the high-walled canyon, the cattle and other livestock had stopped eating and lifted their heads with a mild curiosity. Mildred was about to call out to JB, but she realized it would only bring the attention of whoever had fired the gun. Now the armorer was on the move, holding the blaster at the hip, stooped over as if he were afraid of catching his hat on low branches.